Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is adding a graphical user interface to your WebSphere application server JIPython script with Swing. Today's presenter is Bob Gibson. Bob is an advisory software engineer who has over a quarter century of experience in numerous software-related roles at IBM, including application programmer, architect, developer, instructor, technical support analyst, and tester. He is currently a team lead for the technical support group responsible for IBM WebSphere Distributed Application Server. He holds both a Bachelor of Science degree in Engineering Science and a Master of Science degree in Computer Science from the University of Virginia. At this point in time, I would like to pass the presentation over to Bob.
Thank you, Joseph. I appreciate everyone taking some time out of their busy days and schedules to attend this, and I hope you find the information that we're going to cover useful. I'd also like to take a moment to thank the kind person who sent feedback to the site to raise my ego, letting me know that they were going to attend. It was it gave me a real big smile. Anyway, let's go to the next foil, which is foil one, and this shows high-level agenda. We're just going to talk about a bunch of stuff and go over some simple examples. Time doesn't permit us to go into a great deal of detail, but hopefully it gives you an indication of some of the things that you can do to add graphical user interface to your WebSphere application server, WSAdmin, JIPython scripts using Swing. Page 3. This is just an indication to show how easy it is to generate ugly output. This is a sample command invoking WSAdmin with no connection required to the application server to display the server ports that are available or configured for a particular server, which happened to be named NodeAgent. And the underline portions, the underlined at the top shows the actual command that would be executed, and the underlined sections lower down shows a particular connection, the SOAP connection address, and then the associated port for that connection. Page 4, please. Okay, if we use a little bit of effort, we can make that output much easier for people to understand and interpret, and much more humanly consumable. Page 5, please. The output of that sample script for the particular node agent server is shown here, and it's nice column output. But a couple of things come to your mind if you look at this. One is it's just in some seemingly random order. The port numbers are not in increasing value, and the endpoint names aren't necessarily in alphabetical order, so it may be difficult or a little bit challenging to find a particular port number of interest. But if we look at the penultimate line, the next to the last line, we see the SOAP connector address has a port number value of 8896, which corresponds to the same value that we saw earlier with the really ugly output. Page 6, please. What we're interested in talking about today is how do we make the output of our scripts more humanly consumable, more user-friendly, provide an opportunity for users who are very used to graphical user input, being able to, for example, click on for selection, and buttons and input fields and sliders and all sorts of widget controls, they are available as part of the Swing Java Foundation classwork that was put into place and has been available for more than a dozen years. We have all sorts of presentation objects, and these include trees, tables, lists, and all sorts of stuff. the distinction between high-level and low-level objects are the high-level objects allow us to gather or hold information at a higher level of perspective, and the lower level are specific things like labels or input fields or buttons or things like that. Page 7, please. Okay, one of the big distinctions on these different aspects or objects are the difference between components and containers. So there are some significant main primary components, and these are top-level containers. They hold other objects. And the top-level containers are frame, JFrames, JApplet, JWindow, JDialog. Almost all of the examples in this particular presentation will be making use of the JFrame as the primary container. And the other objects will be added to the top-level container and then displayed to the user for their interaction. Page 8, please. Okay, the good news is since Wing has been around for a dozen plus years, I think it was first created in 1997, there have been lots of examples, books, articles, websites that have lots of Java code examples. And it is relatively easy, if you're able to understand and read Java, to convert or translate the Java applications, Java samples, into JSON. The bad news is not all of the examples that you encounter are outstanding or best practices. So we have to take that into consideration. Originally, and in many of the examples that I find if I look on the internet, they don't take into effect or take into account the fact that the application really should be designed so that things that cause events are in reaction to user input, for example, should be handled with care so that they don't consume or cause the application to just freeze. And if your event handler does too much work, then your whole application may stop or pause or hang while that work is being done. And so we have to take that into consideration, especially when the kind of work that we frequently would be doing with a WebSphere application, server application, is interacting with WebSphere scripting objects. And they can sometimes take a while to return. So we need to be careful when we have these interactions with scripting objects. Page 9, please. Okay. The way that I learned and have been continuing my education about Swing is looking for opportunities and looking into details. There is a Java tutorial series from the Oracle website that talks about Swing and developing Swing applications. I've gone through many of those applications and translated them from Java and got them working when written in JSON, and that allowed me to experiment and play and learn and practice, and that's a great way of reinforcing the knowledge as I work along. It is such a huge topic, though, that it can be quite overwhelming if you look at the Java Swing hierarchy in its entirety. It is enormous. I think there's a Java Swing book that talks about all of the different pieces, and it's like 1,200 pages long. But you don't have to know everything in order to start and have simple applications, and we'll see that in a little bit. Page 10, please. Okay, let's start with a tiny, trivial application to just open a tiny window. And one of the things that we have to be careful about is in the WS admin environment, if we have an execute a script, even a JSON script, if we're not careful, if we specify it in a file, it will run to completion and the script will terminate and we may not even see our application. So we need to put something in there to keep the script running. The technique that I tend to use is to add a little call to the raw input method, Python method, to tell the user that at the command line where they started the script, that the script is waiting, and if they press enter, the script will terminate and close the application window. Next page, page 11, please. Okay, here is a complete 24-line, including blank lines, trivial application. At the top, the first few lines, we specify or import the necessary classes that we'll be using. The runnable class is part of the Java Lang class, and what that allows us to do is instantiate an instance of our application class and let it execute. Our own descendant class of the runnable class is defined in lines 13 through 18, and what happens is when the runnable class is instantiated, it saves the name of our own application class, and then when that is executed, it will invoke the constructor for our class. And the reason for this is shown or seen in line 21, where we use the swing utilities invoke later method to cause the instantiation and creation of our class to occur on the event dispatch thread. Their threading is a topic that frequently comes up in the discussion of swing applications, and I don't have enough time to go into great detail in this. Let's just simply say that the best practices have caused us to use this technique to cause the creation of our application to be instantiated, and that will cause our application to display and then wait for user input. In this case, line 22 is showing that when this script is being executed, the script itself will wait there while our application is displayed. Now, our particular application is defined from lines 4 to 11, and everything is done or defined within the trivial app constructor, which is called underscore underscore init underscore underscore. The first thing is we do is, since this is a descendant of the JFrame class, is we initiate or construct the JFrame base class and define or provide the name of our frame, and notice how the string trivial app occurs in the title bar of our sample window to the right. And then we, in the next statement, define how big our window is in width and height and pixels. And then we define what happens when the user clicks on the close, the little X in the top right-hand corner. And then we add a label, the ubiquitous hello world, and then we call the self-show method. Now, an interesting thing about this is many of the examples that I encountered while learning Jython Swing or Java Swing used the self-show method. Now, one of the advantages of Jython is it's so easy to do stuff like this, and one of the disadvantages, we'll see in a little bit, is that we don't execute the Java compiler, which would tell us that the show method here has been deprecated, and the appropriate method to be used, as we'll see later, is calling setVisible. But let's go to page 12, please. Okay, one neat thing about this trivial application, and that, you know, two dozen lines of code, we can drag it around, move it, resize it, maximize, minimize it, and close it without any additional code. So there's an amazing amount of functionality that's provided by this framework. Page 13, please. Here we talk about the invoke later, the swing utilities method that causes the instantiation of our object to occur on the event dispatch thread. This is some of the main points about why that is important. And we need to understand it at a certain level, but and until we get into more complex examples, we may not really understand why this is the case. But as your knowledge and understanding of threads and swing events increases, you'll better understand the need for doing these things on the swing event dispatch thread. Page 14, please. Okay, that trivial example we had using a class is shown here without defining a class. All we do here in these few lines of code is instantiate a JFrame and specify a title, and we set its size, and we set the default close operation, and then we call show. So this shows that if we're playing around with something, we don't really need to define classes, but it's generally best, it's unlikely that you're going to be developing a non-trivial application without using a class and invoking the file as a script. And one of the, let's go to page 15. I think the next point I was going to talk about is there. Okay, unlike Java, Jython isn't strongly typed, and so since there's no compile phase, we won't get warnings about deprecation of methods. So that's one of the things that we can learn if we're basing our knowledge and understanding of Jython swing applications using the Java as a beginning point for doing some of our testing. We can check out and verify that the methods that we're planning on calling are still recommended or, in fact, have been deprecated. The other alternative is to do some checking against the online documentation to see if the methods that we plan on using have, in fact, been deprecated. And the Java documentation for those classes and objects is quite complete and up to date. Okay, let's go to page 16, please. All right, let's do a little bit more complicated example. And in addition to the runnable class and the invocation at the bottom of our first, this, in addition to our label field, has a button. And this shows how easy it is to create a button and have an associated event. This shows in line 12 where we create a button, and not only do we have a label for that button, we specify that here is a method within this same class that will be called when the button is clicked. And this is just amazingly simple and easy. One of the things that this button press method is able to do is, since it's all part of the same class, we can use it to reference other values, fields, components, attributes within this same class. And the example shown here is, in line 21, is when the button is pressed, the one of the side effects is disabling the buttons. And the image to the left shows the before, and the one to the right shows after. When the press me button is clicked, we see that the event causes a message to be updated as well as disabling the button. So a lot of control and capabilities are made easily available to us in our application development with very concise terminology in our examples. Page 17, please. Okay, one of the things that you will see if you're looking in examples is invariably there's going to be a number of ways or approaches to do things. And in many of the early examples I saw, I was interested in positioning the application window in the center of the screen. Without specifying that, it would always start in the upper left-hand corner, and I didn't like that. And so the examples in that first bullet show that we can call routines to find out how big our window is and then compute where we want to position it. And then when we instantiate the frame, we position it in a specific point, and the application will, in fact, start in the center of the screen. all well and good, but not intuitively obvious, and a little bit of work is computation is required to do that. But then later on, as I was working, I encountered another method, just specifying the location relative to or invoking that method to say automatically, since this is such a common thing, by setting it to none, that would automatically do that computation for me. So there are many, many examples of that kind of thing. So be willing and interested in looking around and looking for multiple examples can sometimes show you and teach you various ways to do it, and you can find out the one that appeals to you or makes the most sense to you or works best for your specific environment. Page 18, please. One of the things that we'll see if you're looking in Jython examples is Java is set up to require you to have many steps, invocations of the different methods to do the things that you want. For example, here at the top, we see where you create a frame, and then you specify the layout, and you define the application size, and you set the default close operation, and then you can create a button number one and number two, and then you add the action listener. What does that mean? Well, that means that the surrounding class, in order to be able to respond to the button click, has to be done in multiple steps, whereas in Jython, we're able to, in one statement, create the frame, set the layout manager, set the size, set the close operation, and then we can, in two steps, create buttons, give them labels, define the associated action method to be invoked, and then add it to the frame. So things can be much more concisely stated, and in that way, they are frequently easier to understand. Page 19, please. Okay, one of the things that this alluded to on the earlier page was the layout manager. And what this is about is there are various ways of defining where your components are going to be shown or seen in your application. The flow layout just will position them left to right, top to bottom, as you add them to the frame. Border layout, you'll specify whether things are in the middle or around the outside. Grid layout is like almost like a table or something. Box layout, you can specify whether vertically or horizontally. And then the more complicated spring layout, you can position things exactly or more precisely. Let's take a look at an example on page 19 that helps us better understand these various techniques. Page 20, please. Okay, this is an example of a frame, and in fact it uses another concept, an internal frame, for these different layout techniques. And the top left one is flow layout, and the buttons that were added, we don't tell it where they're added, we just add them in order, and so button number one is positioned in the top left, and then the next one is to the right of it, and the next one is to the right of it, until the width of the frame is exceeded, and the next one goes on the next line. The border layout, we specify using the constants associated with directions, north, south, east, and west. The next box layout y-axis, we can identify things from top to bottom. The grid layout is, notice the buttons consume the entire thing, the entire inner frame, and the bottom left inner frame shows a box layout x where things are going horizontally across. And then the most complicated, the spring layout example, we can position things very meticulously, and because of that, it requires a lot more detail of exactly how big the components are and where they are positioned precisely. Let's go to page 21, please. Okay, where were we? What was the start of this whole thing? The example that we began with was, hey, let's look at the port numbers for a particular application server. And what would it take to do using Swing in our application? All right, let's go to page 22, please. All right, say we have a number of application servers in our environment. If we use something like a tabbed pane, as shown in the image, we could have a tab for each of the servers. Like, hey, that's pretty neat. And the details for each could be shown in the area beneath the tab. And as we click on each tab, we could then show the information there. It's like, and that doesn't require a whole lot of code. It's kind of neat. But there are some challenges. Let's go to page 23, please. Unfortunately, if you have a non-trivial cell, you're quickly going to get lots and quite frequently too many tabs. And the other thing is we don't see an inherent relationship between the nodes and the servers, and it's not as obvious where things stand. So let's take a look at another example on page 24. All right. One of the things that we see frequently is a tree hierarchy. The simple example, the image to the top, is in its original unexpanded form where we see the hierarchy. The top entry corresponds to the cell, and each entry underneath is a node, and the inherent built-in capabilities of our tree structure, we can click on an entry and cause it to be expanded. And the code to the left that we see is all that's required to create the tree example that we see. It's pretty amazing how little code is required to create a simple tree example with intuitive actions. When we click to select items, and tree nodes will be collapsed or expanded based on our actions and events. And this is a structure that is familiar to almost everyone. Page 25, please. Okay. The really neat thing about this is it's a component that is part of Swing automatically, and it's something that makes sense and we can use it quite easily. Unfortunately, we may not like the default attributes of this structure. So we have to figure out what those are and see if they are appropriate for our environment. Let's go to page 26, please. For example, the fact that we had a tree there doesn't allow us to see the corresponding information. So if we wanted to have some additional information for the selected node, one technique would be to split our frame and on one portion have the tree and the other portion have the port information. Okay, let's look to page 27, please. And the example here is, with very little effort, I was able to take the tree portion and I'll leave it almost intact and then add a secondary pane to the right in which we could add some additional detail that would be later expanded to display the port information. Here in the second image, we see that by default, we are allowed to select multiple nodes. And that's probably not something that we want as our capability or feature of this particular application. So we'll need to figure out how to turn that off. So that's a question of how do we look into and find the attribute or characteristic that we need to specify or change the default value. Page 28, please. Okay. The way to display information about the ports, we saw earlier in the human consumable simple output, it made sense to display it in a table. We had the column headings at the top, and we had values in the two columns for the port numbers and the associated names of the entry points. And one of the neat data structures that's part of Swing is a table. And if we have our two-dimensional array of data and our column headings, we can create a table using a statement like we see at the very bottom of this page. 29, please. Okay, so using that example, we can, this is a simple use of a table, and it has the data, Now, line 30 in here is it called a method called by port number to obtain the port numbers for the specified server. And that gives us a two-dimensional table of the port numbers and the endpoint names. And that is something that we can take advantage of very easily. The problem is we see that some of the default characteristics of this table is the first example has chosen the size of each column for us, and it may not be what we want. Another thing is we can drag the cell at the top, the label, column label, to shrink the size of the fields, and that may not be what we want. We can also drag our columns to reposition the order in which they're displayed. That may not be a characteristic or attribute that we want. So these are all sorts of default characteristics that are part of the data structure known as a table that we need to take into consideration for our applications. Okay, let's look on page 30, please. There are all sorts of built-in features or characteristics for our tables. We can modify values, we can change, reorder, resize the columns, and we have to decide how we want the information to be displayed and also which of these default characteristics we want to continue using or which we want to change. And another thing is that we have to take into consideration is if we're going to have multiple occurrences of this data structure in our application, then we might want to define the characteristics in one class, in the class on which all J tables are used by default is called the default table model. We can create our own table model that will define how all of our tables in our application will be done if we so choose. Page 31, please. Okay, and this allows us to set the column width, specify whether columns are sizable, specify whether cells or rows or columns are selectable, and lots of other details. And that's one of the challenges of a very complicated and function-rich component such as the JTable. Page 32, please. What we're going to look into is we want to, in all likelihood, fix the columns where they're going to be positioned, specify that we only want to allow port numbers. The original idea that I had for this application was, gee, I'd like to be able to use this to manage my port numbers. And, for example, I could double-click on a port number and change the port number, and that underlying event handler would be able to interact with the scripting objects to cause that port number to be modified by my application. The example that's provided here with this presentation does not have that functionality. It's one of the things that I did not get to to part of this as of yet, but it's something I'm considering in additional work in the future. Page 33, please. Okay. One of the things that pointed out or talked about was the resizing of columns. And this, one of the things that I was trying to figure out is what does this characteristic or property cause me to do or how should I understand it? And that is, I wanted to see what would happen in my application if I chose one of these different techniques. Well, one of the ways to do that is to have a simple application that allows me to make this change or selection and track it back and forth. Page 34, please. And so what I did is I created a trivial little application, most of the code for which is shown to the left, and this allows me to use a radio button to select which of these resize attributes I would be using, and when you select one of those radio buttons, you can then drag a column to change its size and see what happens to the other columns. And for example, the default value that was selected was the subsequent column. So if I were to grab the vertical bar between column Roman numeral 1 and column Roman numeral 2, I could drag it to the left or right and see what happens to the remaining column widths. And by selecting a different radio button and doing that same kind of movement, I could better understand the implications of that resize property. And it was really easy to create this simple application, and it gave me a better understanding of this particular property. So this is another thing that's really neat about Jython swing applications, how easy it is to create a simple application like this that allows you to work with, experiment, play with this kind of property and the better understand what that would mean for your particular application. Page 35, please. Okay, the table models are used by the table constructor to decide how the table is going to look, how it's going to act, how it's going to react to different events, which events are allowed to be used for the table. And in the case of the application we're talking about, an application that would allow me to display the port numbers for my different servers, I would think that all of the tables to be used would be used to display information about port numbers for the different servers, and so the common consistent characteristics for all of these tables would make sense, and so I could use a table model to make sure that all of the tables used by my application would look the same and act the same among each of the different servers. Page 36, please. And this continues details about why we would want to make our own table model to enforce that consistency of the look and feel, if you will, of all of the tables used by our application. And let's go to page 37, please. Okay, here is a quick application prototype for making some of the changes that have been discussed earlier, only allow one server to be selected, and what happens is when a node is expanded and a server is selected, the write pane is populated with the table showing the port numbers for that server. And that makes a lot of sense, and it would be relatively intuitive for most users of that application. It makes a lot of sense. And the only thing it doesn't show here is I could double-click on a specific port number, and that cell would be editable, and I could change that value, and I could verify that the value that was entered was numeric and wasn't a port conflict and all sorts of stuff based on my specific needs. Let's go to page 38, please. Okay, one of the things that this shows is we can quickly create applications and iterate over the design based on our understanding of the components and their interactions and the event model, and then tie that in with the underlying WebSphere scripting objects to manipulate either the configuration details or attributes, or, in fact, we could have it interact with active mbeans to manipulate those values, depending on our own application desires. So one of the things that we find if we look at this is this could be a time sink, and you should be aware of that because it can be really neat to play around with these different things and try different things, and it's very easy to ask what if kind of questions to say, you know, what's a better way of displaying this information? Do I want to use a table, or do I want to use input fields? Or I was talking with someone yesterday about different ways for example, changing the console timeout. And we said, well, you could do something like radio buttons for specific values or input field or a slider or all sorts of components that are part of the swing framework that are available to us in our applications. And we could experiment with those very easily and see what looks the best in our opinion, and then in fact we could have our colleagues take a look at it and see what makes sense in, to them. Let's look on page 39, please. Okay, it can be a time sink, but it can greatly improve the usability of our administrative script applications and make it much easier for the users of those applications to interact with and in fact, limit or restrict them for what they can and cannot do. By investing time and effort to create an application, a targeted application, we can minimize the amount of expertise that's required on the part of the users to make the changes that they may want to change. So we can use the rapid prototyping to create these applications, to try various techniques for presenting the information and see what makes most sense to our users. But it can be time-consuming to learn this non-trivial framework, knowledge, understanding, and I find it very worthwhile, and hopefully you too will see the benefit of investing time and effort to learning this capability. Let's go to page 40, please. Okay, one of the things about this presentation was I had to choose a level of complexity or whatever for this, and I chose advanced because event handling and event programming is non-trivial and is something that can require a great deal of work and effort and knowledge and understanding. So it's a bit more complicated than the simple cut and dried script development or simple interactive commands at the WS admin prompt, but the benefit of the way your applications look and the control that you have is just very, very impressive. And overall, I think it's well worth the time and effort on your part. Let's go to page 41, please. Okay, there are other Webster resources available for us and you. Page 42, please. And this, we can go, I guess, now to the question and answer session.
Thank you, Bob, for a wonderful presentation. At this point in time, Jackie, we would like to open the lines for questions.
And we have no questions on the phone.
Thank you, Jackie. And it looks like we don't have any questions coming in through the group chat. So at this point in time, we will conclude the presentation.